About 200,000 people have fled their homes in the Democratic Republic of the Congo in recent days, with dozens of civilians killed by Rwanda-backed rebels in the country's east. M23's latest offensive comes despite a US-mediated peace agreement, which was signed last week by the Congolese and Rwandan presidents in Washington. Beverly Ochieng is a senior analyst at the intelligence firm Control Risks, based in Dakar in Senegal. I spoke with her earlier. Beverly Ochieng, welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thank you so much, Mel.
Now, there's been an escalation of fighting in DRC in recent days. Can you tell me what your understanding is of the situation on the ground?
Well, yes. So just days after a peace agreement between DRC, its neighboring country, Rwanda, which was brokered by the US, a rebel group that has been on the offensive against the DR Congolese army that has been reportedly backed by Rwanda, seized a town in the Sud-Kivu region in the eastern part of DR Congo. This town is quite strategic. It is the second main city in Sud-Kivu, but also it connects DRC with Burundi, which has been supporting it with fighting against this group. The group is known as the March 23 movement. Fighting has been progressing ever since then. Thousands of residents have been forced to flee. Strategically speaking, that this puts DR Congo in a disadvantaged position because they're not able to coordinate with the army in Burundi to fight against these rebels. And at the same time, it's likely to cut off key supplies going into Burundi and is increasingly moving towards the mineral regions, which DRC needs for revenues and also to be able to uphold this peace and economic deal that had been brokered by the United States.
So Rwanda's denying that it's supporting this March 23, M23 rebel group, although it seems there's evidence to the contrary. Can you tell me a bit more about this group and its actions in the region and what it's trying to achieve?
Well, yeah, so M23 has been active for decades in the eastern region of DRC, and they resumed fighting against the government at the start of this year by seizing various towns in the Nord Kivu region. Over the years, there have been various allegations of Rwanda giving it indirect or direct support, and some of those concerns have come in UN reports where they've noted that M23 fighters have fairly sophisticated weapons, that they seem to be very militarily capable, considering the fact that the vast majority of armed groups in eastern DRC simply take advantage of security gaps to be able to continue the insurgency. But M23 has proven to be quite capable. By the start of the year, when they had resurged with the offensive and they were seizing towns in Nord Kivu, there was some evidence that Rwandan forces were actually present on the ground and fighting alongside them. So in parts of Nord Kivu, they were able to cut off key supply chains and progressively go into the Sud Kivu region. The government has still been fighting against them, but they haven't been able to achieve much, considering the fact that M23 is receiving considerable reinforcements and peace agreements have been breached, ceasefires have been breached, but they have been active for years. Their main contention is that the government has not been, according to the M23, including members of the Tutsi community, in governance, in central governance structures, and has been targeting civilians from the Tutsi community in its offensive in the eastern region. So this has led to a lot of confrontation, not just between M23 and the government, but also involved Rwanda.
And this comes after Donald Trump had apparently brokered a peace deal between DRC President Felix Tshisekedi and Rwanda's Paul Kagame. So what was really achieved in those talks? Can we consider that effectively broken down now?
I mean, it was always going to be a symbolic agreement. Part of the reason why it was being rushed was because it would boost Washington's and Trump's credibility as a peacemaker. But realistically speaking, there is not much to compel either side from ceasing hostilities. There are still various other mechanisms that need to be applied and that both sides need to commit to in order for a ceasefire to be achievable. There's a separate process with Qatar, which had been brokering a deal directly between the rebel groups as well as the government. There's also various African initiatives being led by the African Union, the East African Community, and then there's various other outstanding issues that need to be signed by both parties. Some of them include humanitarian access, judicial protection, a truth and reconciliation commission, economic and social recovery. The key thing with this deal that the US brokered was because of the vast mineral wealth in eastern DRC, one way of trying to ensure that American businesses can secure business agreements in the country is by holding peace talks, at least at a very political level, enabling the US to leverage that as access into mineral-rich areas in DRC.
You're listening to Radio National Breakfast, where intelligence analyst Beverly Ochieng is our guest as we discuss the intensifying conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Beverly, I want to go to West Africa now and ask you about that, because there was an attempted coup in Benin on Sunday when a group of soldiers stormed the offices of the country's state television station and announced the removal of the president. The government said it thwarted the attempt. What's happened since then?
Well, yes, I mean, the government forces were able to retake control. They got control from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, as well as French intelligence, and they're still pursuing the people who were behind the attempted coup. The key leader was reportedly, he fled into Togo. There are other rumors that suggest that he may have fled into Burkina Faso. At the moment, the government in Benin has managed to assert control over its institutions. There's an investigation underway. But of course, this coup comes, or this attempted coup comes, just 10 days after a successful coup in Guinea-Bissau and a wave of military coups that have gripped the region since 2020.
Why has the security situation deteriorated in the region such that we've seen so many successful coups in the last couple of years?
I mean, yes, each has been as a result of a variety of factors. So the ones that started off in Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, primarily underpinned by insecurity, armed and insurgent groups have been taking territory and attacking military forces in various parts of those countries over the years. Some are linked to the Al-Qaeda, some are linked to the Islamic State, and security forces and the government and civilians had become quite disgruntled with how the government was intervening, as well as the support by international forces. And so military stepped in as arbiters at the point when protests were taking place against insecurity and the fact that this insecurity is hampering economic activities. In Guinea, which is a country that is actually preparing to hold elections in December, they've been under military rule for 5 years now. The coup took place after constitutional changes where the government, the president then, Alpha Conde, wanted to stay in power for much longer. So he lifted presidential terms and also extended his presidential stay in office. In Guinea-Bissau, the most recent one, it was during an election. There was contestation about the credibility of that election. The military stepped in, but there are allegations that the president or the outgoing president was linked to this. But ultimately, it does stem back to the fact that institutions have been, there's been loss of mistrust in institutions, including the Electoral Commission, judiciaries, military forces facing off with militant groups without adequate support, both from international, regional, and local actors. And these misgivings have enabled militaries, which are very politicized, to be able to step in and claim to be arbiters.
Beverly Ochieng, thank you very much for taking me through the circumstances this morning.
Thank you as well for having me, Mel.